Well, just this last week, I received some good news and some bad news. I'll start off with the bad news. This last week, I found out the exact day I'm going to die. It's true. But the good news is, it's not until Sunday, November 19th, 2056. So now I have confidence to go skydiving or run with the bulls in Pamplona because I'm guaranteed not to die until then. How do I know this, you may wonder? Deathclock.com. It's a very uplifting website. You can go put in your birth date, your height, and your weight, and it will calculate, according to actuarial tables, your projected lifespan, guaranteed to be accurate, right? But I wonder if you absolutely knew you wouldn't die for at least 30 years, would it change how you live? Would it open any new doors for you? On the other hand, what if deathclock.com gave you April 30th, 2018? What if you only had 30 days to live? Would that affect your next 30 days? Today and for the next 2 weeks, we're going to look at people's near-death experiences and how that affected how they live. That's kind of the closest we can come for now to Jesus' resurrection on Easter. But I want to start us off by looking at how Jesus lived knowing when and how he would die. Jesus told his disciples many times that he would be arrested, that he would be crucified, that he would rise again, and they understood not a word of it at the time. But here's one of the times he told them that Good Friday and Easter were coming, Matthew chapter 20. While Jesus was going up to Jerusalem, he took the 12 disciples aside by themselves and said to them on the way, "See, we are going up to Jerusalem, and the Son of Man will be handed over to the chief priests and the scribes. They will condemn him to death. Then they will hand him over to the Gentiles to be mocked and flogged and crucified. And on the third day, he will be raised." Jesus called them to him and said, "You know that the rulers of the Gentiles lord it over them, and their great ones are tyrants over them, but it will not be so among you. Whoever wishes to be great among you must be your servant. Whoever wishes to be first among you must be your slave, just as the Son of Man," that's Jesus, "came not to be served, but to serve, and to give his life as a ransom for many." This is the word of the Lord, so thanks be to God. Amanda Cable was asked by her daughter, who was now a teenager. Her daughter asked her, "Mom, do you remember my very first day at school?" And Amanda replied, "I will never forget it, Ruby. You started school on Thursday, September 5th, 2003. That was the day I died." On her daughter Ruby's first day of school, Amanda was in the hospital with a surprise sickness and severe internal bleeding, and she awoke briefly in the hospital at about 3:30 in the morning to the sound of a doctor screaming at her and slapping her in the face, "Wake up, stay with me." Through the haze, she heard, you know, alarms going off and wondered why the doctors were cursing so much. And it struck her after a few moments that the doctors were cursing and the alarms were going off because she was dying. She remembered the last thing she thought was, "By the time my family wakes up this morning, I'll be gone." But instead of pain, she actually felt light and clear-headed. Actually, kind of a warm acceptance came over her. She knew it was time to join her loved ones who were already on the other side. But then she noticed something strange. Someone was standing a few feet away from her, but instead of, you know, some dearly departed relative as she expected, it was actually her daughter Ruby. And Ruby was in her new school uniform, sporting a new hairdo that she had never had before, with her hair up in bunches. Ruby took her mother's hand and led her quickly down a white tunnel, turning back to say, implore her mom, "Quick, mommy, quick, mommy." Then they came to a gate, and Amanda felt tugged in two different directions. She had an urge to walk back down that tunnel to go find her dearly departed relatives, but little Ruby shouted at her, "Mommy, step through the gate now!" And so as Amanda rushed through, Ruby slammed the gate behind her, and that was the moment Amanda woke up as the defibrillator brought her back to life. Her husband, Ray, arrived just a few hours later, unaware of what had happened that night. He wanted to cheer her up, so he brought a picture of their daughter, Ruby, going to school for the first day. And in the picture, Ruby was wearing her school uniform and had her hair in this new look she'd never had before, up in bunches, exactly like it was in Amanda's experience. And she reports that her life has never been the same ever since that day. She said, "Ironically, my death was to prove the turning point of my whole life. I stopped seeing the people I didn't truly love, and I told the ones that I did love just how much they meant to me. Ray and I had been married for 9 years by then, but my experience reminded me there was nobody else on earth I wanted to be with. We had always been devoted to each other, but now we realized just how lost we would be without each other. I will never be able to understand or explain what happened to me on that fateful day, but I no longer harbor a fear of death, and at the same time, I have stopped being scared of life. I've never looked back since." They say you don't really know what you have until you lose it. Amanda almost lost everything, and as a result, it put the rest of her life into a new perspective. Life was never the same again. And that was the kind of impact that first Easter had. First on the women in the tomb, then the disciples, and across 2,000 years to us today. Because if Easter happened, life can never be the same again. Most of you know that, I am a nerd in general and a space nerd in particular. And it is often said that, you know, that if we discovered that, life existed on another planet, that we weren't alone in the universe, that'd be like the biggest discovery in human history. But I beg to differ, because that wouldn't really affect everyone. But absolutely everyone dies. And so if we knew, absolutely knew, that there was life after death, that would be the biggest discovery in human history. But that discovery took place on Easter morning in Jerusalem 2,000 years ago. If Jesus can rise from the dead, not rise from the almost dead if you're a Princess Bride fan, rise from the all dead, then that means there is life after death. That means there is a God with power over death, and that should change our lives forever. A miracle definitely happened on that first Easter morning. Either the Son of God arose from the dead, either that miracle happened, or another miracle happened. 11 Jewish men concocted a lie they were willing to die for, and that lie eventually convinced a third of the planet of its truth. One of those miracles happened on Easter. Which one do you believe? Getting ready for this series, I have read a ton of near-death experiences, and again, I'm a nerd, so I read a lot of the research as well the scientists have done. But one near constant among these experiences, those who've had something like Amanda went through as her heart was failing, they're never the same. Now, some are like really intentional, as Amanda is in her experience, but just about all of them see their lives turn in radically new directions. Because once you are absolutely convinced that there is life after death, everything changes. How you spend your time takes on a new dimension. And so I wonder if we are living like that. Are we convinced, absolutely convinced, that there is life after death, as Jesus promised and as he proved, rising from the dead? And if we are convinced of that, are we living as if we have that new dimension, that eternal perspective? What matters most in your life? If you were the one fading fast on the operating table, what would you miss most? What would you wish you had done or said? And what's stopping you from doing that or saying that this week? As Jesus approached his own death, he told his disciples exactly what he wanted them to focus on. In the second text today, he told them, "Whoever wishes to be great among you must be your servant. Whoever wishes to be the first must be your slave. Just as the Son of Man," that's Jesus, "came not to be served but to serve and to give his life as a ransom for many." That's how Jesus wants us to focus our lives. You know, I always think it's funny, you know, like these groups that find a way to calculate like the day that Jesus is going to come back or the day that the world will end, and they've got this crazy math that goes along with it. And invariably, if it's a group in the United States, what happens 30 days before that date is they start selling their homes and liquidating their stocks, and let's go to Vegas, baby. Now, it's funny to think, you know, what are they going to do the next day when it doesn't happen? Let's grant that they were right. What if they were right and Jesus was going to return, you know, on April 17th, 2018, and you've just spent the last 30 days in Vegas? Does that sound like what Jesus told his disciples to do? Well, no, if we really did have 30 days to live, Jesus says, use your final days as I used mine. And he wasn't in Vegas. He wasn't lavishing gifts on himself. He wasn't even like sequestered away like a hermit, you know, just spending time with he and God. No, he was serving. He was helping others. He was training his followers. He was healing. That's what he thought was important. What's stopping us from living like that this week, no matter what deathclock.com tells us our lifespan will be? In the first text we read today about the empty tomb, the women were wanting to do something very special. The text says they brought spices to anoint Jesus' body, and that was somewhat common, but nowhere close to universal. It wasn't a requirement. You didn't have to do that. It was done to mark that someone was very special to you. And so they wanted to come to the tomb as like a last act of devotion, to say that even in death, this is how special you were to us, Jesus. Now, normally, this would be done before burial. That would make sense, right? But Jesus died right before the Sabbath, which starts on Friday evening. So Jesus died just before that. And in the Jewish culture, you're not allowed to do work on the Sabbath. So what they had just enough time to kind of whisk his body to the tomb, not enough time to anoint him with spices. So they were wanting to do this mission, to come with this purpose. Such was their devotion that they came after they waited, you know, the Sabbath requirements. They come on Sunday morning and they didn't have a plan. They knew that there was a stone there so large that the three of them together could not roll it away. But they just wanted to do what they could. They showed up without a plan. They had a mission to perform, even though they had no clue how they would accomplish it. And so I wonder what's important enough in our lives that we'd be willing to just show up without a plan. If you rewind, again, to Amanda's near-death experience, what would have gone through your mind as you heard that doctor trying to slap your face, getting you to stay with them? What would you be thinking? What would you wish you had done or said? What would Jesus have you say or do? What's that important? That you'd be willing to start it even if you had no plan, even if you have no idea how it would turn out, like those women at the tomb. No clue what would happen next, but they knew what was important was to show up with their act of devotion. What's that important? If you've ever read the Old Testament, that's like the first two-thirds of your Bible, you might have noticed that in like the first book of the Bible, Genesis, people lived a good bit longer than we did. And Noah was the last. This is a technical term, by the way. You can write this down. Super-duper centenarians. He died at 950. Or Methuselah took the prize at 969. And so in high school, to explain this, the deep theologian I was in high school, I decided that God must give us 1,000 years to live. And every time we do something stupid or we stress out or we eat something not so good, you know, then it takes time off the clock. So I would be like, you know, eating a succulent cinnamon roll going, oh yeah, that's worth all 3 years of my lifespan right there. And it was a joke, but the concept behind it was that life was about not messing up. Don't do something wrong and you'll be okay. And really, that's kind of like the basic premise of most religions, right? Don't mess up or you'll be punished. That's what most faiths are really saying, but not ours. Because in our faith, we worship a God who, even while hanging on the cross, said, Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do. We worship a God who had one of his closest followers, Peter, deny him 3 times. And so Jesus went out of his way to especially restore Peter's faith. We worship a God who knows we're going to mess up. And rather than saying, well, you've somehow got to be perfect, our God says, I know you're going to mess up. I'm going to fix it for you. That's the good news of Easter. Because our faith isn't about not messing up. Our faith is about a God who sees our bazillions of mistakes and denials and refusals and says, I love you anyway. How can we live differently because of that good news? If deathclock.com gave you 30 days to live, what would God have you do? What would God have you say? How can you live in the light of that good news? And what's stopping you from doing it this week? Remember what Amanda Cable said about the result of her near-death experience. She said, I no longer harbor a fear about death, and at the same time, I have stopped being scared of life. I have never looked back since. May the same thing be true of us, thanks to the good news of Easter. Sisters and brothers, he is risen. He is risen indeed. He is risen.
He is risen indeed.
Amen.